Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776.
You can hunt for
and
it.
The Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom, and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I'm your hostess for this evening. As always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who truly understand that we are the nation. As Jefferson so ably put it in the Declaration of Independence, governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. We truly are this nation, ladies and gentlemen, and so we must be aware of where it is going, and we must stand up and speak out if we believe that it is heading in the wrong direction. Tonight on Patriot Education, we're going to talk a little bit about the wonders of progressivism in education and their purpose of creating utopia. Well, first of all, utopia is impossible to create anyway. But progressives are firmly convinced that all they have to do to create their utopian philosopher kingdom is catch our children at age 5 and have them thoroughly indoctrinated into the integrity of the group and the negligible effect or importance of the individual, and utopia will somehow blossom as a rose in the summer. Our public schools, ladies and gentlemen, for the past 30 to 35 years have become the laboratory for the utopia of the progressives, which I have described in previous episodes as the collectivism of the Borg. For those of you who have ever watched Star Trek Next Generation, you'll remember the Borg, those charming semi-machine, semi-physical, flesh and blood bodies who existed in a state of hive mind and whose function was to absorb the knowledge and skills and abilities of any species of thinking beings they encountered, consume them, and turn the entire universe into the Borg collective. Progressives, of course, would say, oh, gee, there's that crazy lady again, you know, talking about silly science fiction, when all we really want to do is to make sure that there's equal stuff in everybody's house, and that we live those words in the Constitution, that all men are created equal. But unfortunately, the progressives don't understand the meaning of equal as it was envisioned by our founding fathers. It was not equal outcomes, which is what they want from education. It was equal opportunity and equal justice under the law. Our schools are doing everything they can to subvert the brilliance of our founding fathers and the documents on which this nation was based. Instead of trumpeting the worth, the value, the innovative creativity of the individual, they praise and sing Hosanna for the collective, the Borg mind, the happy semi-machines quietly going about their business and rousing to fierce anger if their collectivism is threatened. Freedom of speech is unnecessary in the Borg collective because everybody knows exactly what everybody else is going to say because nobody has any thought that's different from anybody else's. This is the utopia that progressives are dying to create. Today, I had a nice little example of some of the ways in which they do it with only one student in my ISS classroom. This youngster is a special education student who is in collaborative classes. In our school, all special education students are in collaborative classes. There are a few very small classes for math and English for those who simply cannot manage to behave themselves sufficiently so that everybody else in the collective class and collaborative class can hear the teacher. They are pulled out in classes of less than 10 and dealt with a little bit the way you deal with a cage full of very hungry, very disorganized, very unfriendly monkeys. The teacher spends more time attempting to entertain and keep order and prevent them from using profanity than he or she does in actually teaching them anything. Not because the teachers aren't good and not because the teachers don't want them to learn, but because the product they have to work with is incapable of shutting up long enough to listen to a word they say. Well, this young gentleman is not quite that bad, but he has the attention span of a backward fruit fly. It is difficult for him to focus on anything more than one five-word sentence in a row. Part of his history assignment was to prepare for a visit to his classroom by a state trooper who is the spouse of his history teacher, and the chance to participate in a discussion with this state trooper on the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. The history class is currently working on the founding of our nation, the Constitution, its bones, why it was created, how it was created, what it basically does, the design that it builds for our government. And his assignment was to read through the first 10 amendments, simplified and made clear, because our kids are not capable of understanding 18th century English, to simplify it so that he could then put forth, think up, and write down three questions regarding that he could ask this state trooper who was visiting that were directly related to three different amendments in the Bill of Rights. So I was explaining the various amendments, going from the original language to the explanation he had, which basically didn't cover everything. It simplified it down to the usual watered-down stuff. And he just sat there and stared at me. And I said, well, what's the problem? He said, well, I'm getting stressed because you're telling me so much that I'm confused. I said, okay, then what is it that you want me to tell you? Well, I just want you to tell me what you write down as an answer. I said, no, I don't do that. This is the way this child has gone through the first 5.5 years of his education. Somebody has told him what to write down as an answer. Somebody has given him a test to study and memorize so that when he is taking the test, he hopefully will remember what answer goes with what question because he had it to study the day before. In addition to being confused by an explanation of something that is absolutely essential to becoming a functioning citizen, we also had a wonderful time solving single-step equations in math, which also confused him and stressed him out because he wanted me to tell him what answer to write down instead of how to show the steps to solve the equation 3x equals 18. It took about 45 minutes and 7 different explanations to get him to understand how to do it. I could afford to take the time because he was the only student I had. Now, picture this same student in a 55 to 60 minute classroom hour with 20 plus other students in the room and at least 2 teachers and probably 1 or 2 aides. How much is anybody going to learn if this child's need to have everything explained 7 or 8 times has to be done in the midst of the teacher trying to explain something to the class? It doesn't make any sense, ladies and gentlemen. I was talking to one of the teachers about collaborative classes. And she happens to be a special education teacher. And she said, I'll be frank with you, I would not want my kids in a collaborative class because it's never going to be challenged. And yet, she is obligated by the structure of public education to work in a classroom that she would not want to put her own children in. The kids in those classrooms are not going to be challenged or required to think because the kids who can't do the work will feel bad about themselves, and the kids who can do the work will not be able to figure out why the ones who can't get the test as a study guide and don't have to do anything but look at it, and yet they're expected to actually remember what they were taught. The whole system is riddled with progressivism, collectivist thought. In order to make everybody equal in outcomes, progressive educational theory dumbs down the material to the lowest common denominator. It is as idiotic as assuming that every child in every classroom is a genius, is a Leonardo da Vinci, and all you have to do is show them the alphabet and 10 minutes later they're reading Shakespeare. Both ideas are absolutely absurd and totally insane. And yet, because progressivism plays on emotion, progressive educational theorists have convinced parents and educators and the news media and everybody else that children need to feel good about themselves, and that's what the public education system is there to do. They must be made to feel part of the group. They must be given the equality to which they are entitled in the outcomes of their educational progress. If there is any faster or surer way to create a nation of sheep who are just standing there waiting for the wolf to come and choose his dinner. I've never heard of it. We also have all these delightful programs in our schools to work on the evils of bullying and the horrible idea that if somebody pushes and shoves you, you might turn around and push and shove back so they'll stop, and how cruel and unkind that is. And no, you just need to show them love and talk to them and let them know that you care about them, and they will stop those kinds of activities. And if you see them doing that to someone else that you don't know and don't particularly like, you need to either step in and say something or go to an adult and tell them that this person that you really don't care about and don't like is being badly treated by somebody else you don't care about and don't like at the age of 12. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, 12-year-olds don't have the capacity to understand anybody is worth anything except their BFF or the members of their particular little group. 12-year-olds do not understand bullying. Emotional or psychological bullying is a closed door. The kind of bullying that they vaguely understand is the big mean kid who bashes them over their head and steals their lunch money. That is it. The finer points of psychological and emotional bullying, they do not have the knowledge or life experience to be able to recognize, let alone intervene and prevent. And all of the happy kumbaya moments and discussion groups and PowerPoint presentations every week or every day or every month or whenever they do it, will not put adult life experience in the heads of 12 and 13-year-olds. As long as we sit back and accept public education as the only game in town, and as long as we allow ourselves to believe that, oh, well, the government should regulate this because otherwise people will have a bad education because the government is so good at fixing things. And whenever the government steps in to do something, it's very efficient and it always works and we all love it. Still reminds me of that old joke, hi there, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, and everybody runs like crazy. It's just absurd. But this is progressivism, ladies and gentlemen. Another aspect of progressivism in education that I saw today was the fact that where my classroom is located is in a sort of a cul-de-sac in the school. And in general, the only people who travel past my doors are going to one of four other classrooms along the hallway that's at that end of the school. And for the last month and a half or so, somebody has decided that it's funny to run up to the ISS classroom door, bang on it three or four times, and run away, which, of course, immediately disturbs any students I have in there, who are usually very easily disturbed anyway. It's annoying, but mostly I ignore it because it's an incredibly childish thing to do. And these are children we're working with. Well, the children who have been doing it, and I knew who they were, and spoke to them about it, and of course both of them swore up and down it wasn't them, have apparently been bragging about how clever they are to do this to all their little friends. And I was finally able to catch the two of them with their teacher present and discuss with them how kindergarten this action was. And, oh, I didn't do it, and tell them, no, I'm sorry. I don't believe you. My friend Yo said that it was she doing it. And believe me, she has a better right to come into my school and bang on ISS doors than these two kids do any day. Because my friend Yo does more for this nation than those two kids will ever do in their entire lives. But these kids have the opportunity to do that because they attend a very small remedial math class right across the hall from my in-school suspension room. And both of them are major behavior problems. They are out of class more often than they are in it. I have had them in and out of my happy little jail before, only briefly, because they are of the category of special education students with behavioral problems. So they can't help it that they are disruptive, rude, profane, and altogether uncouth. So they have not been sentenced to my little jail because it's in their IEP that these kind of outbursts are beyond their control, so we just have to put up with it. It only happens because they're frustrated. Yeah. And they're frustrated because they, too, are in collaborative classes, ladies and gentlemen, and are frustrated because they're not understanding what's going on. Partly because they're continually interrupting the teacher or throwing something or giggling or laughing or making fart noises as a means of garnering attention and not paying a bit of attention to what is attempting to be taught to them. This is progressivism, ladies and gentlemen. This is that wonderful, all-encompassing, open your arms and let all of these kids know how much they're loved. And if we just put the kids who have difficulty learning in classes with the kids who don't have difficulty learning, the kids with problems are going to improve, and the kids who don't have problems are going to learn compassion for the less fortunate brethren. Guess what? It doesn't work that way. The class average in collaborative classes ranges from 10 to 30 points lower than regular general education classes. And it's not because of the grades of the 40% who are below average in their skills. It's because the ones who aren't, the 60% who aren't below average, figure why the heck should they bother to work? And because the pace of the class is dictated by our state standard of learning, everything has to be watered down and attempted to cram in within a specific chronological period so as to be ready for the state standards of learning tests, which are given at the end of the year and are a factor in whether or not the student is promoted. The inability of our educators to look at what they are doing and really see the effects instead of constantly playing the same cards in the same way, in the same hand, and expecting a different outcome every time drives me crazy. And believe me, I don't have that far to go. But this is the utopia, ladies and gentlemen, that progressivism in educational theory is creating. It's a utopia for them because it means they have a population who are too stupid and too lazy to question anything the benevolent progressive elite tells them is good for them. And who cannot wait to have the rest of us bow down and worship their incredible brilliance and kind-heartedness and the amazingly wise regulations that they will impose to protect us from our wrong choices. Add in the attempt by progressive educators to make little boys into little girls by doing everything they can to channel, as they put it, the natural aggressiveness of little boys into the kumbaya moment of, gee, I'm sorry I bumped you in the locker room. Let me give you a hug. When are the progressives going to catch up with the Time cover story of 40 years ago that said, guess what, men and women are different? and so are little boys and little girls. And isn't just their plumbing, ladies and gentlemen. Males and females, whether they are in childhood or adulthood, approach problem solving, choice making, and thinking differently. And they are biologically designed to do exactly the same things as far as elimination of wastes, etc., but not to solve problems or to do physical activities in the same way. My friend Linda mentioned women in combat, and oh yeah, that's where I'm going. All right. I have absolutely no objection, being a libertarian, to any person, male or female, saying, I want to wager my personal body on the field of battle to protect my nation and what it stands for. I want to go out there and take a chance of somebody shooting me to death to defend my country. Go for it. Okay. Fine. But don't go for it if, when you are out there wagering your personal body on the battlefield to protect our country, you can't wager your personal body and take care of the rest of the members of your military unit if you have to. I'm 5 feet 4 inches tall, ladies and gentlemen. I weigh about 125 pounds. Even when I was young and vigorous, there is no way on earth that I could carry a 70-pound pack on a forced march for 12 to 14 hours, and at the end of it, drag a wounded comrade 10 miles to an aid station. I couldn't drag a wounded comrade 10 feet. I do not have the physical strength to do so. Now, if I were 6 feet tall, weighed 180 pounds, and had the musculature of an Amazon, it's possible I could compete on an equal basis and provide the same kind of military combat expertise as a male of that same height and weight. But at 5'4 and 125 pounds, no, I can't do it. Also, because I am female, it is hardwired into my biology that I am much more inclined to nurture that wounded comrade once he's back at an aid station than I am to pick up the rifle and blow away 30 or 40 people while somebody else carries him there. I do not buy unisex, ladies and gentlemen, and neither does anyone else who has the vaguest understanding of human psychology and anatomy. We are not the same. Duh. Yes, we're equal. No, we're not the same. I'm equally as bright as just about any male I know, but I am not equally as strong, nor am I equally as aggressive and as willing to wager my physical body. Okay. I do not have that motivation. And I do not believe that the vast majority of women do, in spite of the punching, kicking, biting kind of behavior that girls sometimes show in relationships with boys. That most of that is because the boys have been taught that they're not allowed to strike back, so the girls get away with it. But in a military situation, in a combat situation, the enemy is not going to say, oh, well, it's not nice to hit girls. Go ahead and shoot me. No, honey. Men and women are different, and I go along with my friend Linda. Vive la différence. I agree completely. I like being girl. I have no desire to be male. I'm quite content with my biological, emotional, and mental equipment the way it is. I do not expect my grandsons to sit down quietly in a corner with an embroidery hoop and have a tea set and have long conversations with stuffed animals. Either. I expect them to want to go outside and hit things, which they thoroughly enjoy doing. I have known since I was about 5 that if something makes a great deal of noise, goes very fast, and may potentially blow up, it's a guy toy. And it doesn't interest me. That's one of the reasons why if I want a dragon slain, I'm not going to go to my BFF girlfriend from third grade. I'm going to find the biggest, meanest, nastiest male person with the longest sword I can find and send him to do it. And I will fix him the very best feast he ever had when he comes home with a dragon's head. Even if I have to have it catered because I don't like to cook. These aspects of our natures and the way our brains are wired, and it's literally hardwired, there have been several studies done that show that different areas of the brain are engaged in males and females when problem-solving activities are presented to them. Women tend to use both halves of the brain, the right and left halves, hemispheres, in coming to a decision, solving a problem, or choosing a path. Men generally do not. It has been determined, through much testing, that the left hemisphere of the brain appears in most people who are neurologically normal to be the site of language, reasoning skills, mathematical conceptualization, the order and pattern of the universe and behaviors. And the right hemisphere is more the intuitive, emotional, subliminal, sensory decision maker. Women tend to use both right and left hemispheres when they are approaching problem solving. They also tend to use the part of the brain at the base in the back, that the hippocampus, which pulls the influences and intuitions and ideas and patterns from both those hemispheres together. There is more activity in that coordinating section of the brain when women are engaged in problem-solving tasks than there is in men. Usually, the left brain shows more activity when a man is doing problem-solving tasks. The logical, rational, mathematical, verbal, orderly aspect of our thinking. So, it should be fairly obvious that in a situation where somebody wants to kill you and has a great big gun to do with it, sitting down and thinking about, well, gee, I'll bet he's got a really nice wife, and if I remind him about it, maybe he'll put his gun down and we'll both hug each other and the war will be over, is probably not going to solve the situation. Right brain is not going to get you home alive. Left brain is more likely to do so. So who do you want out there dealing with that fellow with that great big gun? The combined right-left brain thinker who weighs equally, shoot him and hug him? Or the left brain thinker who says, shoot him because if I don't, he's going to kill me? I'll take the latter, okay? I prefer that. Because I really don't want that guy to shoot a whole bunch of people and then come and shoot me. The whole point of armies, ladies and gentlemen, is their job is to kill people and break things. That's what they do. And sometimes you come to a point between nations or groups where killing people and breaking things is the only way to stop an aggressor from taking everything you have and enslaving you. And I would like to have an army that is good at killing people and breaking things so that that aggressor doesn't come past them while they're thinking about a hug or a bullet and kill me and take everything I have and enslave my children. You cannot make little boys into little girls and you cannot make men into women. And I do not want men to be women and I do not want to be a man. And this has absolutely nothing to do with sexuality. This has to do solely with gender. Okay? The biological, physical, emotional, and mental patterning that comes with the sexual equipment. I am not going to go into the discussion of gay marriage or anything else on this program tonight. That's a topic for another day. Being a libertarian, I go along with Jefferson and state quite firmly that if it doesn't break my leg or pick my pocket, I don't care what you do. But progressives have taken over our educational system, ladies and gentlemen. They have done everything in their power through feel-good emotional garbage to convince American parents that their children can be remodeled into something other than who they are. And it's good for them to have this happen. One of the most misunderstood aspects of progressives, because they are very good at doublespeak, is that they do a great deal of verbalizing about the freedom of the individual and individual rights. The ACLU is very, very sensitive to individual rights and diversity, and you should be proud of who you are. And there is no right or wrong, there's just different. There's no bad behavior, there's only communication we don't understand. Makes them sound like being an individual is the most important thing, doesn't it? That is what they want you to think. Because if they can make you feel good about yourself, whether you're 6 years old or 60, by telling you how open-minded and kind and compassionate you are when you go along with their progressive ideas, you will be very flattered. You will see yourself as wonderful, and you will be standing there with your mouth open, waiting for more of this sweet honey to dribble onto your delicate little tongue and down your delicate little throat and turn to lead in your delicate little belly. Progressives are the least inclusive, the least kind, and the least compassionate human beings this world has ever seen. Because they don't like individuals. Individuals don't go along with the group ethos. Individuals will disturb the Borg collective. How many of you remember the episode of Star Trek Next Generation with Hugh? The Borg that was injured, that the Enterprise took in and made well, and who became friendly with Geordi, and all of a sudden started saying I instead of we. He was a seed that inevitably would destroy the collective, because he thought of himself as an individual. And the progressive Borg of our current political spectrum are terrified by the Hughes among us. The individual is not willing to stand there waiting for the honeyed words. The individual asks, wait a minute, that sounds good, but what does it really mean? And what happens in the future after you've done this? What are the consequences? How does it benefit me? What do I have to give up to have the safety and risk-free life that you're promising me? Because individuals, ladies and gentlemen, like Cassius, as described by Julius Caesar, have a lean and hungry look. Such men think too much and are dangerous. Progressives, like Chris Rock, as my friend Linda mentions, who gave an impassioned speech that President Obama is like our daddy and we need to sit at his feet and listen to what he says and do what he tells us because he's our great half-white father, to use the Native American phrase for the president during the time that they were screwed out of everything they had by the U.S. government. I'm sorry, Mr. Obama is not my daddy. My father is dead. And my father was a greater man on his off days than our current president would ever be on his best day. Because my father didn't expect me to worship at his feet and do everything he told me. My father expected me to be able to get into a discussion with him and logically present my opinion as he presented his. Daddy Obama does not want you to have an opinion that's different than his. Daddy Obama wants you to tell him how wise and wonderful he is and be eager to run and race and shove everyone aside, to be the first one to get his slippers in the evening so that you'll get that pat on the head that tells you you're a good little boy or a good little girl doing as daddy asks. Have you ever watched what abused children do, how they treat the abusive parent? They don't act afraid. They don't cringe. They act very loving, very obedient, very subservient, because they know that that's what the abuser wants. And if they do it well enough, maybe the abuse will stop. I wonder if Chris Rock has ever been abused that way or knows anybody who has. If he has been, or he knows anybody who has, I wonder if he's thought about that sit at the feet of Daddy Obama and listen because he's like our father. Rings any bells? A good father, ladies and gentlemen, does not demand slavish obedience. A good father teaches his son or his daughter independence, self-reliance, and honesty, not slavish adoration. This is the kind of climate that they are attempting to create in our public schools, ladies and gentlemen. Under the guise of diversity and welcoming the different and feeling good about yourself and being kind to everyone and caring about your fellow man and the less fortunate and letting government take your money so that they can give it to the people who deserve it because you're too stupid to figure out who deserves charity. That's something government has to do. Because you are too unkind and dumb and incapable to decide for yourself who you should share with or if you should share at all. Government has to take over your life because you will inevitably make bad choices. And the only way that kind, benevolent Daddy Obama and his happy family government can ensure that you don't make any bad choices is to make sure you don't have any choices at all. It is very difficult to make an error if you are never allowed to choose between two paths. If there is only one answer, it's impossible to get it wrong, especially when it is drilled into you that that's the only answer. We have the opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, those of us on the conservative side of politics, economy, and social issues, to make our voices known to more people than ever before in the history of mankind. We have this wonderful invention of Al Gore's, right, called the Internet, that still is free. How long it will remain so, will depend on how loudly we shout. And another thing that came up today with my little student in ISS, he had no idea, even after studying it for a week, what the five freedoms mentioned in the First Amendment were, or once he knew what they were, what they meant. He didn't know what freedom of the press meant because he didn't know what the press was. He kind of understood freedom of religion. And like most middle school students, freedom of speech was a given. But the part about that he didn't understand was that, yes, you can say anything you want and give your opinion, but nobody has to agree with you. That part he didn't get, because progressives don't get that. Freedom of speech to progressives is the freedom to agree with them. The only people who are allowed to have freedom of speech are people who speak what they want to hear. All you have to do is look at the reactions of students on liberal college campuses, which are 99% of college campuses, when a conservative speaker is there, or the kinds of speakers that are advertised and paid to speak by the universities themselves. I'm Primus from Hillsdale College, which is a little flyer that comes in the mail with articles relevant to conservative education philosophy, politics, the economy, world, global studies, that kind of thing. And the latest one had an article by a former student at Yale talking about the freedom of speech and what it means on the campus of Yale. It means celebrating Sex Week, where porn stars and strippers are invited to demonstrate sex toys in the name of freedom of speech and liberty. Well, when I went to college, that really was not the preferred concert put out by fraternities and sororities. We were really naive. We had things like old Glen Yarborough or the Kingston Trio or something. I mean, you know, we didn't have a stripper demonstrating on stage how to use various sex toys, but, you know, times change. This is education. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, education can mean learning something that you didn't know before and could cover just about anything, which right now it apparently does. Now, whether it's education that is going to make the world any better, I tend to doubt. Make the individual's life better in some ways, perhaps, but make the world any better? I really don't want to major in, you know, sex toys, but that's just me. But this whole asinine infiltration of our public education from university down to kindergarten, teaching five-year-olds, for heaven's sake, about personal sexual gratification by oneself. Okay? No, that's not the function of public schools. Our kids in our middle school have what they call family life, which is what they used to call sex education when my husband and I were in middle school. And the children attend those classes only if their parents give them permission, which is the way it was when I was in middle school too. Because there are differing attitudes and beliefs about what is appropriate in human sexuality in different moral, religious, and spiritual disciplines. And each family should have the right to educate their children in this area at the time and in the way they believe to be morally right. I have absolutely no problem with offering common sense, sensible sexual education, okay, to pubescent teenagers. They have the equipment, they want to use it, and I'd much prefer that they use it in a way that doesn't hurt somebody. But to me, family life or sex education or whatever you call it, is not about teaching sexual gratification. It's about explaining sexuality in a way that the children understand that it has consequences. That engaging in sexual activity with a partner is not just about if it feels good, do it. It's about the consequences of that act, that it can result in the spread of venereal disease, that it can result in an unintended pregnancy, which then means that you will be responsible for another human life, a child, when you are still a child yourself. It's about the kind of emotional harm that can be done to children who are not yet grown up enough or experienced enough to understand the idea of commitment or permanence or the ramifications of becoming sexually active. That kind of family life or sex ed is pretty much what we teach in the school where I work. It isn't a blanket introduction to the adult bookstore and all its delicious products. And believe me, by the time we got to college, it was assumed that we already knew enough, and if we were interested in that, we could go find out for ourselves. We didn't need Sex Week on campus to get a list of products and have live demonstrations. College men and women are not at all, shall we say, shy about experimentation. They really don't need to have all of the various methods of engaging in material, okay, presented to them to the university. They are perfectly capable of finding out and figuring out such things on their own. But it's part and parcel of the progressive idea that there is no right or wrong, that anybody who believes that there are moral values or ethics or any kind of positive versus negative behaviors is inevitably racist, bigoted, evil, unkind, lacking compassion, jingoistic, any other pejorative term that implies that they hate everybody except those who are exactly like them. This is as insane and as upside down as it gets, folks. Tonight on Glenn Beck's show, he was talking with Judge Andrew Napolitano about the fact that because the Republican Party has become progressive light in order to encourage everybody to get under its big tent, there really is no political machinery for those of us who espouse conservative values, economically conservative, socially conservative, politically conservative, any or all of those. And that this is an opportunity for libertarians, which most Americans actually are, to make inroads in the political climate and have the chance to, as he put it, get a seat back at the table that Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson jerked out from under them and threw out the window back at the turn of the 20th century. And he's correct in that. But he was also correct when he described libertarians getting together to do anything as being a great deal like herding cats. And believe me, I understand about herding cats. I have 6 cats and I work in a middle school, so I know it from both sides. Being libertarian means that you do espouse Jefferson's, if it doesn't break my leg or pick my pocket, go right ahead and do it. That is one of the best and simplest explanation of what it means to be a libertarian. Judge Napolitano added another one, which I feel is something that we should be teaching our children. We cannot empower government to do things as a government that we are not empowered to do as individuals. In other words, if it is wrong for me to walk into your house uninvited and take your property because you have it and I don't, then it should be wrong for government to do that as well. If you have committed no crime or treated people in any bad way or anything of that nature, why does government have the right to do things to us that we do not have the right to do to one another? And speaking of cats, ladies and gentlemen, I just had to move one from in front of my monitor because I couldn't see the chat room. And my friends Linda and Yo, basically, and Dean are saying the same thing, and Bill, that they saw it too, most of them, and they agreed. And most of us are libertarians. Libertarian thinking is the idea that in order to be a self-governing people, we have to first govern ourselves as individuals. We need to regulate ourselves. We do not and cannot allow government to regulate us for us because we are incapable of doing it for ourselves. That is the open door to tyranny. When we say to government, I am too stupid to make my own rules and to think for myself and help myself and understand what's right and wrong, you have to tell me. You have to tell me because I am too dumb to figure out what I should and should not do. Then we're just standing saying, okay, here I am, put on my surf collar, you know, I'm a thrall, fasten the collar around my neck, I'm a slave, put the manacles on, okay? I'm a serf, tie me to the land, you know, whoever has the city rules me. My friend Rod arrived. He's late, but he says he brought me an apple. Crunch, crunch. It's delicious, Rod. Thank you. We don't penalize you for late to class. Not in this classroom, anyway. Because this classroom is full of functioning adults, ladies and gentlemen. Men and women who understand that they have a great deal of responsibility that goes with their great deal of freedom. That their lives mean something, not because somebody tells them they do, but because they put forth effort and conquered obstacles and refused to give up when things didn't go their way. So I'm easy on the adults who are late for class because I know them. I know that they aren't just sitting in their parents' basement getting high on whatever substance happens to be under the sofa with nothing to do but make nasty comments on a chat room. These are people who work for a living, who care for their families, who speak out for what they believe to be correct, and who work for all of us, who refuse to sit down and shut up and watch their country go to hell in a handbasket. I spend 5 days a week, 9 months of the year, doing my best to teach children the things that they need to know to be educated persons and model for them the characteristics they need to have to be decent, self-governing, honest people. I don't get rich doing it. Far from it. I don't have people building statues to me. I don't have testimonial dinners. Nobody's offered me the Nobel Peace Prize, or any other kind of prize for that matter, except a sort of good conduct certificate because I only was absent 2 days last year, which I suppose is some sort of an award. But anybody else who was open and only absent 2 days got one too, so it didn't single me out in any special way, which was fine. I don't expect that kind of thing. I do not expect to have hordes of happy students greeting me at the front door and sitting at my feet like they would for Chris Rock's Daddy Obama and telling me how wonderful I am. No, I'm sorry. I'm not at all interested in being a goddess worshipped by a bunch of slaves. What I do expect and what I do require from the students I teach is at least an attempt to live by the golden rule, to treat others the way they wish to be treated. And I require and expect that they will put forth their best effort in the work they are given by me and their teachers. I also require that they abide by the rules of my classroom, because as an adult, they will be expected to abide by the rules of the world's classroom. And the consequences for not abiding by the rules of ethics, morality, decency, and honesty are much more devastating, much more long-term, and much more deadly than one day in the company of crazy Mrs. Rowland having to do English, math, history, and science work. It's not the kind of job that gets me, you know, mentioned in the Time magazine as Woman of the Year. It isn't the kind of job that will make me incredibly famous or incredibly wealthy. It isn't the kind of job that will give me power over the world or even my classroom half the time when I have somebody in there whose IEP says that they're allowed to act like an idiot because they can't help it. But it is the kind of job that gives me satisfaction. Because if nowhere else, at least in my classroom, knowledge is valued, learning is as important to knowledge as teaching is, and courtesy is expected, not just desired. That is what I do. It's one tiny drop in an ocean of progressive education, and I can't change it all by myself. But I also know, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm not all by myself. There are lots and lots and lots of me's out there who are seeing the same things that I am seeing and who are doing the same things or even more that I am doing to make the rest of this country see what is happening in our public schools. We have alternatives to the Borg collective that classrooms are trying to inculcate. We have the opportunity and the ability to petition the government for redress of grievances, one of those five happy little freedoms in the First Amendment. We can say we demand the opportunity to educate our kids wherever we feel they will learn the best. We should have the option of putting them in a private school that gives them a learning environment that suits them and nurtures their abilities and gives them knowledge. We also have the right to say to our elected representatives, what are you going to do to fix the problems we've got now? And don't just tell me you're going to throw money at it. Because we've thrown way more money at public schools in the last 50 years than we probably have in the entire history of our country combined. And look what we've got. It's not money that our education system needs. It's common sense. Progressives are in love with the idea of technology. They're in love with the idea about training our kids to compete in the global market. And yet, they won't see, or can't see, that that same technology could be used effectively to give our kids the kind of individualized help they need and still let them learn competition and learn how to meet deadlines and measure their progress so that we know they can go ahead because they've mastered the material first. It's there. There are places that are using it. I think the KIPP schools in California do. The Knowledge is Power. I know Carpe Diem School does. Many public schools with the flipped learning system are taking advantage of technology. I talked about that last week. The idea that students listen to the teacher's lecture and explanation on a YouTube video at home so they can back it up, pause it, think about it, listen to it again, and then they go into class the next day and apply that, where they've had the time to listen at their rate. And that's when they can ask the teacher questions, when the teacher can go from person to person and take the time to help the one that doesn't understand, because the ones who got it right away, they're already starting on the practical application. It's there, and it can be used. But progressives do not want individualized education. They say they do. But they don't want that because it means that the bright kid can go ahead. And that'll make the kid who isn't bright feel bad. Well, how the heck is the kid who isn't bright going to know it? And it takes less teachers. Oh my gosh, there's a great big block of money and voters in the teachers' unions that we won't have to buy elections with. We can't have that kind of stuff. We need those teachers' unions who call for 4, 5, 6 teachers in a classroom and 3 or 4 classroom aides to give all of the children the individualized attention they need so that it works out that those kids who need individualized education cost the taxpayer about $80,000 a year versus the $2,000 that the kid who has to learn it by himself does. You look at the salaries of the 4 people in a classroom, a collaborative classroom, whose function is to take care of those who can't keep up. It could be two special ed teachers and 2 aides, 3 aides and a special ed teacher, 2 special ed teachers, an aide, and a student teacher. That's 4 salaries that benefit 40% of the class. There are so many things, ladies and gentlemen, that we can do, that we can implement. But it won't happen if we sit back and just nod our heads and say, oh, yes, you know better. And I know there are a lot of parents out there who hesitate to question the teacher or the methods because they think, oh, well, they must know what they're doing. They're taught how to teach. Well, actually, they're not. They're taught that if the kid isn't learning, it's their fault. They're taught to be entertainers, not teachers. We spend more time in classrooms trying to keep the little darlings entertained than we do teaching them. When I taught a Spanish class, half the class said I was a rotten teacher because I didn't teach them how to sing songs as a way of learning Spanish. I taught them really nasty, hard things like conjugating verbs. So I was a bad teacher. They are so used to being the center stage and expecting to be entertained every moment in the classroom. It's like, you know, school is supposed to be just one great big circus or a party. I shouldn't have to work in there. Work? Heavens no, that's what grown-ups do. I'm not ready for that. I'm a kid. We keep our children children way longer than any society in the history of mankind. We keep them infantile until they're 30, for heaven's sake. And that is going to keep us on the top of the global heap? I don't think so. We can change it, ladies and gentlemen. Every single one of us. Every single one of us. Everybody who's out there in the chat room, my friends Bill and Linda and Rod and Yo and Dean, who was here earlier. Every single one of them is doing something. They're standing up for what they believe. Linda goes to every meeting in her California town to put the brakes on Agenda 21. Bill does the same thing in Indiana. Yo, bless her heart, even though she doesn't feel good half the time, she's online, she's talking to people, she's posting links to information. Rod does the same thing. All of our members of Patriot Families do. We know that we are not alone, ladies and gentlemen. And those of you listening out there, you're not alone either. You can do things. Even if you don't have children in the schools, take the time. take the time to listen in on a school board meeting. Volunteer at your public school. Watch what happens. Get to know the teachers and the principals. They're people too. Most of them are good, dedicated people. Some of them are overeducated, barely functioning idiots, just like in any profession. But these professionals are molding your future, ladies and gentlemen, because they're molding the minds and hearts and abilities of the people in 10 years or so who are going to be voting for the members of Congress who make your laws and whoever occupies the Oval Office and sees that they are carried out and appoints members of the Supreme Court who decide whether or not legislation is justifiable and legal under the Constitution. These are future voters, and we have got to realize that. The progressives know, and they've been working diligently to make them future progressive voters by teaching them that they are entitled to feel good, whether they do anything positive or not, that the world owes them success, and that equal and alike mean the same thing in outcomes. They've been doing it for a good long time. We have our work cut out for us, but we can stop it. If we have the wherewithal and the time, we can pull our kids out of public school and educate them at home, or find a good private school that will actually require them to demonstrate some effort and give them honest grades and not feel good A's when they're reading six grade levels below their actual grade. We can change things. I'll remind everybody out there listening, from my friend Bill Strong, February the 11th is Expose Agenda 21 Day. Blog post and expose the agenda all day. And he's correct. Today, another little insight into our happy little progressives. Part of this young gentleman's science notes that he wanted me to explain so he could get just the right answer, just like history. They're on the ecology chapter. And the material he was reading was about sustainable development. Sound familiar, Bill? Sound familiar, Linda? Sustainable development in his notes. And that county and state agencies create regulation and regulatory bodies to encourage sustainable development. So that whatever we build or do, the planet will not be harmed for future generations. And it sounds really good. But when you don't understand what the UN's Agenda 21 meaning of sustainable development is, and sixth graders do not have the understanding or the ability to figure that out, we have to do it for them. The UN's sustainable development means kill off as many people as possible so that all the animals and trees and rivers and clouds and mountains and plants will be happy and we will all be firmly controlled in our individual villages where our energy output will exactly equal our energy consumption. And nobody will have any more than anybody else of anything. And we will worship Gaia, the sentient planet. This is proof positive, ladies and gentlemen. This is a sixth grader. With notes that he's required to read, digest, and then answer questions about on sustainable development. And as far as he knows, it's a good thing because it sounds good. Making sure that when we build things, we don't damage the wildlife or pollute the water or make the land unusable for future generations. And nobody goes into detail because sixth graders really aren't capable of absorbing the unintended consequences of the UN's version of sustainable development. The total abolishment of private property rights, for one. And herding us all into happy little villages where you must live because if you don't, you have no power. And in which, when you do live, you will have only the exact same ration of power as anybody else. So say a prayer that nobody in your family is ill and needs electrically assisted respiratory equipment or specialized heating or specialized air cleansing or more than the approved amount of hot water. I remember a story, it was a news story from, oh, maybe 20 years ago, about a family who lived in a small town in somewhere in the Midwest. And the families was, the opinions of the family's neighbors were that they were deadbeats and they didn't pay their bills and, you know, they're always having to, you know, having their electricity cut off and their phone cut off and so on and so forth. And then a reporter started investigating and talked to the family in question. The family had a child with cystic fibrosis. And in order for that child to stay alive, they needed to consume about 6 times the electricity of the average household because the child's lungs had to be, in effect, vacuumed out 5 times a day. They had to have monitors on the child's bed, and the bed itself had to be adjusted on a regular schedule so that the child would not be in the same position all night and die of suffocation. All of those things required a great deal of power. The family had used up all their insurance. Both parents could not work. One parent had to be at home with that child. They had some assistance from visiting nurses, but they had to have somebody with her 24 hours a day. So they had to subsist on one salary. And they were having a horrible time trying to make it. And the story went public. And then all of a sudden, all those neighbors who thought they were such deadbeats realized why sometimes their power was threatened to be cut off and why they were having trouble paying their bills. And their neighbors got together and offered to sit with the child so the mom could do part-time work. And they collected donations to help with the electric bill. They talked to the electric company to get them to donate a certain number of kilowatt hours every month. That family was doing their best to do what they needed to do for their child. And they weren't whining and complaining and standing with their hands out, wanting a bigger television for themselves. They were doing the best they could to save their child's life. And they weren't begging anybody for help. But when their efforts and their situation was made known, the neighbors didn't just turn up their noses and say, well, tough shit. Tough shit. We don't care. No. They were good, honest, kind people, and they helped. Because they knew that these people needed the help and deserved it. Government didn't tell them to help. They decided to help on their own once they knew what the circumstances were. Once they started being neighbors in the sense of more than just living in the same area. That kind of neighborhood, ladies and gentlemen, doesn't come from UN Agenda 21 mandated villages. That kind of neighborhood comes from individual, self-reliant, moral and ethical people seeing that there is need and wanting to help. That's the kind of thing, the kind of beliefs and values that we need to teach our kids. Not all the silly anti-bullying seminars and gobbledygook kumbaya moments that don't work, and gee, be nice to somebody who's gay because it's only fair. Well, you know, it's fair to be nice to everybody, whether they're gay or straight. You don't be unkind to anybody just because you think they're different from you. But you don't automatically assume you have to be them either. We need to teach our children to be individuals. We need them to be compassionate, caring, ethical, and moral individuals. And they can be, without government intervention. Teaching your children to do those things is the responsibility of parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, and adult role models. Families must be responsible for teaching their members ethics and values. You cannot dump your kids on the doorstep of kindergarten and wash your hands of their ethical and moral upbringing and hand it over to the state. Because if you do, you won't have a child with ethics and morals. You will have a happy slave standing there waiting for the poisoned honey with their tongue hanging out. We can change things, ladies and gentlemen. As I've often said, one pebble doesn't do much. But one pebble jarring another pebble and another pebble and then a rock and more pebbles creates an avalanche. I'm a pebble. And I'm hoping that I'll jar enough little pebbles out there listening that sooner or later that avalanche will see the mistakes we are making and do something to correct them. Stop demanding that your child get a certain grade. Grades are not rewards for liking the teacher liking your kid, or feel good, pat on the head, so you won't be embarrassed among your friends. Grades are not proof that you are a better parent than Joe Schmo next door because your kid got a B and his got a C. Grades are nothing more than a yardstick to determine whether or not your child has learned enough to be ready to go on to the next level of education. If they haven't learned enough, they shouldn't get an A. Because if they get that A, you're going to have a functional, illiterate basement dweller for the next 40 years when they get out of high school. Is that what you want? Face reality. Not everybody is going to go to college. Not everybody should go to college. Not everybody is going to be a plumber. Not everybody is going to be a star football player, or tennis player, or baseball player, or hockey player, or soccer player, or swimmer, or any other happy little sports figure. Not everybody sings like Beyonce. Not everybody is a comedian like Bill Cosby. Not everybody gets eased through Harvard like Barack Obama. Or Yale, for that matter. Some people have more skills than others. Oh my God, what a horrifying thought. Wake up, folks. Instead of expecting equal outcomes, let's start expecting equal opportunity and deal with the consequences. Some people will take advantage of an opportunity and fly higher than Mount Everest. Others will ignore it and sink down into the swamp. but it is their individual destiny and choice to do whichever of those two options they do, and all ones in between. You cannot guarantee success for anyone. You can't even guarantee it for yourself. Stop expecting government to guarantee it for everybody. It cannot be done. And no matter how sweet and how charming and how kind progressives sound, what they tell you they can achieve, they can't. They can never achieve it. They are never going to be able to give you what they are promising. They cannot. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us tonight. Thanks to my friends in the chat room, all the members of Patriot Family, Yo and Rod and Linda and Doc and Bill and Dean, who came by to join us tonight. Please join us again next week at 6 p.m. on Thursday, the 14th of February, for Patriot Education, where we talk about some of the things that are wrong with our system and some of the ways we can fix them. And we believe in the hope that we can fix, because we will not sit down, shut up, and stick out our tongues to lick up the poisoned honey. We are individuals and proud of it. We are Americans and proud of that. We believe in this nation and we believe in each other. Join us every night, ladies and gentlemen, here on Blog Talk Radio for our Patriot Family shows. On Sundays, Frank is Fed Up. On Mondays, Constitution Hour. On Tuesdays, Patriot Family Chat. Wednesdays, Right from the Left Coast. Thursday, Patriot Education. On Fridays, Foreclosure Help. On Saturday, Breaking the Illusion. Visit us at our website, read our blogs, and give us your opinions and your ideas. Call in to any of our shows. Talk with our hosts and hostesses. Tell us what's on your mind, what you see. If you want to rant and rave, go right ahead, and we'll be happy to listen, and we'll probably rant and rave along with you. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, you are the nation. We are the nation. Never forget that governments derive their just power from the consent of the governed. And if we consent to be slaves, then we deserve the slave collar. Freedom is risky. Saying what you believe doesn't guarantee that everybody's going to applaud and say, yay, go get them. You may have brickbats thrown at you and rotten eggs and paint dripped over you like those poor women who were wearing fur, because PETA doesn't approve. But you stand up. You keep standing up. Thank God, even though progressives want to change it, the First Amendment is still in force. You have the right to speak freely, to give your opinion. You do not have the right to expect everyone to agree with you. No one does. But that precious right to speak what you believe is too important to let go of. Don't allow yourselves to be silenced. No matter what, know that you are not alone. Have a great evening, everybody. And hopefully we'll see you next week right here on Blog Talk Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Come and visit our website. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, folks. God bless you all. Take care.